good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS this morning. Judge Donna Scott Davenport is with us, and we're going to be talking about abused children. Along with Judge Davenport, we have attorney Matthew Wright from the Department of Children's Services, attorney Erica Reed, who's going to speak about the role of guardian ad litem for the juveniles, and attorney Mark Downton speaks for the perspective, or rather from the perspective of the parents. Judge Scott, good morning to
you. Good morning, Bart. Always great to be here, and I'm excited about our program this morning. We've been here about 14 months, and this is the first time that we've discussed this issue with attorneys and the department. So I'm hoping that we'll have a lot of input from our listeners this morning, especially if we've got a lot of grandparents out there that are raising children. They may find this episode of the program may be beneficial to them.
Very definitely. And we're going to ask you, if you have questions, hold off until the second half of the program so we can sort of set the stage with some useful information to start with. Judge Scott, let me turn it over to you because I'm not that familiar with this topic.
Okay. Well, a lot of people, surprisingly, are not either. One thing that I like for our viewers to know is that in the state of Tennessee, the only court that has exclusive jurisdiction over our children being abused, abandoned, or neglected is that court that has juvenile court jurisdiction. And in Rutherford County, of course, we have our only independent juvenile court. There's now 8 of us in the state.
Well, I can certainly see how this would be a very emotional time in the courtroom.
It is, because especially if we do the removal, they have a right to hearing within 3 days. It's another reason we're urgent and we deal every day with an open court. It's because if I get a one-sided phone call, and it might be at 3 a.m, that the police have arrived somewhere and they have found a baby, maybe abandoned, maybe in horrible conditions, and that child needs to be protected. And I hear just one side. I hear the department side, and I make the verbal order to remove that child and place that child in the care of the state. We place that child in a foster home because the children have done nothing wrong. And then those parents have an absolute right to have their hearing and for me to hear their side of the story within those 3 days.
Now, when that begins, do the parents need to get an attorney, or do they represent themselves? How does it work?
Great question. That's why we have Mr. Downton here today, because by statute, if they're indigent, and that is a determination made by the court, the state will provide them with a free counsel. And Mr. Downton does a lot of parent representations. And as well as the parents getting an attorney, the children will also have an attorney, and we call them guardian ad litems that represent their best interest. And Ms. Reed does a majority of those, but what's so great, one reason I'm glad Ms. Reed and Mr. Downton are here, they do both. They have the guardian training, and they represent the children, and they also represent the parents.
Oh, okay. Tell us a little about what you do. How does this process work?
Why don't we start with Mr. Wright, because he's probably going to get all the heat today because he is with the department, but he's used to that heat every day, aren't you, Mr. Wright?
Yes, sure.
Okay. So why don't you kind of explain to our listeners the involvement in the role of the department?
As the judge said, we have these emergencies, and usually before she gets that call at 3 a.m., they have to call me first to go over what the case is about and whether or not to remove or not. What a lot of times, we try to prevent removal simply because that causes trauma in and of itself. So we make extraordinary efforts to try to place a child with like a relative. Like if we, like the judge says, we got to a home and there's drug usage in that home by the parents. First thing we do is start asking them, do you have a grandparent? Do you have an aunt? Do you have an uncle, a sister? And then we check those people out. And if the parents agree, we place that children there under what we call an IPA, immediate protection agreement. We still have to file a petition and go to court, but you don't have that trauma of going into a home that the child doesn't know. So we make extraordinary efforts to prevent that removal, and we're required to do that under statute. So I would say probably only maybe 10 to 15% of the cases you see in court on those emergency removals represents the total number of referrals we get. And I guess I should explain a referral. Anybody in the state that, and there's a few exceptions, but for the most part, anybody in the state that has a belief that some child's being abused has a legal obligation to make a referral to the department. And we get hundreds of referrals, and then what we have people call CPS, which is Child Protective Services. They go out and they investigate these referrals to see, you know, what's the concerns. And a lot of times we don't have to restrict the parents' rights. It may be something as simple as a housing issue, and we just put resources in the home to help them with those issues. We, you know, contrary to what a lot of the public believes, we don't want to remove children and place them into state custody. We want to try to keep those families together. But when it comes to the point where we do remove, it's my job to go in and represent the state's interest, and the state's interest is to protect the children. And that just varies depending upon the nature of the case. And I'm before the judge. I spend a lot of time with her. We don't always agree on everything, but I have a great deal of respect for the judge, and we work well together, and I work well with Mr. Downey and Ms. Reed as well.
Okay. Well, now tell us, how does Mr. Downey fit into this situation?
Well, let me explain first. If we do a removal, then I'm going to know that. So the next morning when I get in the office, I'm going to have my law clerk go ahead and notify, see who's next in on the appointment list, and notify them to see if they are available for the emergency hearing. So they're going to have not a lot of time, but they're going to have a little bit of time to read the facts. And then I will always give them enough time to talk to their client before the hearing and meet with them so they can get their side of the story. And if they need a little more time, we can do that, because we don't just throw them in and say, here's your client, here's your attorney, and you don't know anything. And then so that's where, and we'll go to Mr. Downton on his perspective of representing the parents maybe.
Okay.
Generally speaking, I get brought in after a removal has occurred. And the way that happens, as the judge explained, is her law clerk gives me a call and says, we're going to have a removal Tuesday afternoon at 2:00. Can you be there? And I usually say yes, and I show up maybe at 12:30 to try to meet the client a little bit before the court hearing. And my role is, it's different than I think most areas of law. It's not as purely adversarial, I don't think. Maybe others see it that way, but all of us, I think, at the core, have the children's interest at heart. My perspective is that a primary interest of a child is to be with his or her parent. And generally speaking, my clients, the judge described it as a rough patch. That might be a euphemism. Sometimes they've been completely laid low in life. But I have a lot of empathy for the people that I represent. I've had certainly some tough times in my life, and So I feel like I can understand where they're coming from. But mostly I think these people feel powerless and alone in life, and one of my roles is to help them see that they have some power. And I think our system is built to show them that they have some power, and we put in place a plan of care for the child, and we give the parents certain action steps to perform, and I help them see what they can do and what they need to do to get their kids back. And if they're not able to do everything, or if we're not able to reach agreements with the state or the guardian ad litem, then we do have hearings and it becomes more adversarial. But my role is a little different because it's not fight, fight, fight all the time. There's a lot of cooperation that's required. And I feel like a big part of what I do is show that parent that I'm in their corner and that I'm on their side, because a lot of these parents haven't had people on their side, or at least they don't feel that way. And I try to explain the legal implications to them of what's happening, when it's happening, and what they can expect. And all of that's very important, because we forget, I think it's easy to forget, that when this happens to a parent or a child, it is the worst thing that has ever happened in their life. And it is the most painful thing. It's probably more painful than any sort of thing that happens in criminal court. It is absolutely painful for these people. And these people who have often, on the outside, done terrible things, they are still people, and they are human beings, and I try to treat them with the respect and dignity that they deserve as human beings, and remind them that they've got that dignity. And sometimes it doesn't work out, but just being in their corner and helping them understand what's happening is my primary job.
Let me be sure I'm understanding this. So Mark Downton, you're speaking on behalf of the parents. You're representing them, basically. Is that right?
I do represent the children on occasion, but more often than not, I represent the parents as they go through this process. And it's most parents want their kids back the day they meet me, and that is often not possible because usually they have a lot of work to do before the state and the judge feel comfortable returning the children to their care. Now, return to the parent is always the goal, and it remains the sole goal for at least 6 to 9 months in every case. And I really, parents often don't believe that that's what the state or the judge want to do, but I do believe that that's what the state and the judge want to do. So I help them do that. And the way that I do that is by working with them on this plan of care. For instance, if somebody has a substance abuse problem, we try to put them in touch with people who can help them with that substance abuse problem. If they're having a housing problem, we try to help coordinate contacts in the community to help them with their housing problem, even if they don't have money. And of course, most of our parents, more than not, are in poverty. And so coordinating those kind of community resources is very important because they don't know about them. And just putting them in touch with people who can help can get them on the solid footing that they need to take care of their children. And that's part of what I do. And also, you know, we do go to court and we do argue. We have hearings and we have trials. And in those, it becomes the adversarial system people are a little bit more used to seeing on television or whatnot. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, I have to work with these guys and the judge to not just help my client, but to try to keep my eye out for the child, too.
Another attorney is with us this morning, Erica Reed, and she is here on behalf of the guardian ad litem. For those of us whose Latin is a little rusty, first of all, tell us what guardian ad litem is.
You will oftentimes hear guardian ad litem in court, also referred to as a GAL. And basically what that role is it's an attorney with specialized training to represent children that have been dependent or neglected. And that attorney looks out for the child's best interest. That doesn't always coincide with what the child wants, and we'll talk about that in a few moments. But primarily, Rule 40 of the Supreme Court addresses all of the guardian ad litem responsibilities, and there's quite a lengthy list. The primary thing that we are most consumed with our time is actually going into the homes and visiting with the children. This is the guardian ad litem provides the children with a voice in the court system. Regardless if they are an infant or if they're 17, 18 years old, the guardian ad litem will be there and they will speak on their behalf. They will always, we will zealously argue just as a parent's attorney would or the DCS attorney would. And our role is to go into the homes, make sure that these children are being adequately taken care of. We offer opinions on visitation with parents. We have input on the tasks that the parents need to do in order to regain custody of their children. The guardian ad litem oftentimes works with law enforcement. We find ourselves very much like the judge in DCS and then our work day doesn't end at 5 o'clock Monday through Friday. We are basically on call around the clock. Holidays, we get calls all hours of the day and night at times depending upon the case. When things blow up, they typically don't blow up in these families during the week or during the working hours, it's afterwards. So we are always available to them. We will find ourselves from one county to the next and our role is to go in, investigate the homes with DCS. We talk to the parents, we talk to the children, school counselors, psychologists, all the providers that deal with these family members and these children so that we can get a good understanding of the life that these children live and how we can best reunify these children. And if we run into a situation where perhaps usually it's more of a preteen, teenager where they want to go home, they don't see eye to eye with us. And if that happens and we cannot resolve that, then it's our duty to go to the court and to tell the court, this child, you know, has this opinion and we have to argue for that child if the court does not agree to appoint another attorney to represent that child. And what I mean by that is if a child and a guardian ad litem go sideways, that child could find themselves with two attorneys. We could have a legal attorney that will argue for what the child wants, regardless if it's best interest or not. And then we have the guardian ad litem whose primary goal is always best interest. So that child could find themselves actually with two attorneys at any given point in time through the court. But it's very important for the guardian ad litem to make sure that they maintain contact with that child to make sure that that child's best interests are being taken care of and the child's getting the services that they need.
Do you find that sometimes your role and the role of the Department of Children's Services sort of overlap?
we do overlap quite a bit, but that actually provides more protection for the child, because DCS is required to be in the home a certain number of times a month. A guardian ad litem does not have a specified number of times. So, you know, depending upon the case, you may not get in there every other week, or you may not get in there, you know, twice a month. So we work with the Department of Children's Services. We're able to work off one another. There's been times that I've spotted issues before they did, and vice versa. So we help one another out with that. And then there are other times that we go sideways, and, you know, my position as a guardian ad litem may not mirror that of DCS. And if that's the case, then we go to court and we argue it out. I mean, they are certainly entitled to their opinion as what we will be. And that's my legal obligation, is to, when I need to be very zealous and to fight against the Department of Children's Services or the parents' attorneys, whatever the case may be.
Another group that we've had on the radio with a similar topic is the court-appointed special advocates, who are watching out. They're just regular people who volunteer their time to be sure that the child's side is always heard, that the child's rights are heard. Do they work with you, or are they separate?
No, we definitely work together. Sometimes we may have a little differing of opinion, but I think one of the unique aspects that CASA brings, the court-appointed special advocate, is that they don't have necessarily that legal background, because as a guardian ad litem, we've got so much of the legal background from our education and specialized training that sometimes we can maybe lose a little bit of insight as to what is it like for somebody who's not in the system day in and day out. We use, you know, words that perhaps the parents or the children may not understand, and I always try to be very conscious of not trying to do that, but it happens sometimes. And CASA doesn't have that. So they can slide in there and they can help us kind of come back down more to the level, per se, of the parent or the child. They provide a different insight, and they're certainly right there in the homes as well. So generally you do have, you have three of us that are in there protecting that child, which is very unique for children in this situation, and it's very vital for their livelihood.
And Judge Davenport, this must be a difficult thing for you, because I know in previous programs we've sort of gotten the feeling of how your courts are. They're not like other courts where attorneys are there arguing cases and what have you. They're there trying to help the children, and it's a whole different atmosphere. And yet it sounds like we've suddenly gotten a full courtroom of attorneys now.
Oh, yes, sir. That's one thing that makes it different. And I always appoint CASA on these type of cases. The law that allows for CASA is for juvenile court as well. And we couldn't do our job either without that wonderful CASA volunteer. And when we built our new juvenile justice center, we had our first open house. I remember somebody said, "Why do you have more than two tables?" Because if you watch TV, you have the defense table and the plaintiff table, and that's it. And I said, "Because I never have just two attorneys in front of me." And it's very easily, I could have any up to seven attorneys, because I could have five children with five different daddies. And they all are present. They get an attorney. The mother gets an attorney. The child gets an attorney. We have the state attorney. And then like Ms. Reed said, if the child goes sideways, then he might get two attorneys. So we are blessed with attorneys in juvenile court. So it is a lot different. And that's one reason we try. Our statute is that it's not adversarial to begin with. It's for helping these families get back together, reunify them, build that family back, and work together and give the services and the encouragement that our parents need to get it together. Because if they don't, then the worst is going to happen to them. As Mr. Dalton says, taking a child away is traumatic. But if they are unable to work this plan close to about a year and they haven't made significant progress, then they may be facing a termination of their parental rights. And to me, that is a death sentence. If we're going to terminate forever their rights to this child and have this child adopted.
Who pays for all of this? As I'm hearing this, I'm thinking, nine attorneys? A lot of other people doing research? That has to cost a fortune.
It does. It costs our taxpayers. And again, I just have the best bar in Rutherford County and juvenile court, because they could be back at their office billing $200 to $300 an hour, and they agree to come on and take appointments because of their compassion and love for our children in this county and the great job that they do, where they bill the state $40 when they're
work in the case and $50 when they're in at the podium per hour. So they're not making a lot, but it still is a lot of money for our state. And our state pays that. The administrative office of the courts is who monitors and keeps that money, and they submit bills, and I review all of those timesheets and send those in for approval. So yes, it's quite a bit of money for our tax dollars.
But the attorneys that are working the cases, they do other things too then.
Oh, absolutely. And if they're indigent, they get the free attorney. Is that what you were going to say, Mr. Wright?
No, I think it's also important to note, because I was a parent's attorney for about 5 years, the AOC also has caps, and on these contested cases, Mr. Downton and Ms. Reed, they can attest to this, they'll max out usually on that cap maybe 2 or 3 months into the case, and this case may go on for 9 months. Well, that next 6 months, essentially, they're working for free pro bono. So the attorneys that do this type of work, they're giving a lot of themselves that they don't really have to give. I think it's important to know.
It's extremely important to know, because when you're in private practice, you want that fight time. You want that paperwork, because you can bill your client for that. These ladies and gentlemen do it because they want to do what's right for our children in this community. And these two I know, most every attorney I have, they have probably worked half for free, if not more, for the whole year. Because they do cap out like at $1,500 total. And that they could reach that easily, as Mr. Wright said, in just a couple of months. And the case will go on for 9, 12 months.
It's a whole different mindset that they got somewhere right after law school, I guess. I'm not sure where they would get it.
I think you have it before law school. You know, when I went to law school, I thought I was going to change the world. I was going to do all this civil rights stuff and all of that. And shortly after I graduated, I took a job down here in Murfreesboro, and I wound up in then referee Scott's courtroom doing some of this at the very early stages when we were still working out kinks, and came back kind of full-time a few years later. And, you know, I don't think that many lawyers wind up being the guy who argues Brown versus Board of Education, but in this kind of work, I feel like we are changing the world, you know, and we don't even get to see it most of the time. But this is how you do it. You work with families, and you know, I can't think of a better way to help people than to help them with what they live with, what they do at home, and what these children see day to day. So with that in mind, it's a little bit easier to swallow the fact that I'm probably never going to be a rich man, but you know, I'll at least feel like I've contributed something.
And I think it's if you're just coming out of law school, because a lot of your courts, besides with the exception of juvenile, most of your things are settled these days. You don't have as many trial attorneys. If you're coming out of law school, if you want to become a trial attorney, juvenile court's a good place to do it, because you will have hearings, you will learn how to be a trial attorney. It doesn't pay a lot, but you get that experience, which is invaluable, because they can't teach you that in law school.
Today we're learning about a different aspect of taking care of our youngsters here in the community. We're going to pause and check on the traffic and weather. We will be back in the next segment is when we open up the phone lines. So if you have any questions, I mean, we have some very talented people here who have seen a lot. They have a lot of experience. They can help you. Our number is 893-1450. 893-1450. We'll be right back.
This is George Plaster. Join me for Sports Night, weekdays 3 to 6, right after all sports talk at 2 here on WGNS.
New at Ford of Murfreesboro is the 2013 Ford Fusion Hybrid and Fusion Energy Plug-in Hybrid. The Fusion Energy has plug-in technology to further your charge, which means that you'll get amazing gas mileage. The new plug-in Fusion becomes America's most fuel-efficient sedan in 2013 with a rating of 108 miles per gallon in city driving. Visit fordofmurfreesboro.com at the intersection of Broad and Northfield.
Hi, this is David Lee, General Manager at Ford of Murfreesboro, and I invite you to come down and see our full selection of Fords, and we'll give you the best deal in town.
For decades, we've been telling you that Bell Furniture has first-quality name-brand furniture half-price every day. Now this locally-owned family business has pictures of some of their furniture on the Internet at www.bellfurnitureonline.com. Save with Perry Bell at Bell Furniture. 1517, the new Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna. And on the Internet at www.bellfurnitureonline.com.
Hi, I'm Robert McConnell, and if you have a car problem, me and my team on Broad Street are here to help.
Robert's Auto Repair, on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro.
At Robert's Auto Repair, we're always honest, always fair.
896-1407.
Good morning. Had one accident earlier in the clearing stages. Broad Street at Old Fort Parkway should be out of the way by now, not causing any major problems for us. Bit of congestion still. Old Fort Parkway at Chaffin Place, Old Fort Parkway at Kaysen Lane, Broad at Church, Broad at Memorial. Still pretty busy. I-24 at 96, I-24 Medical Center Parkway. Still busy traffic there. If you're suffering from headaches, low back pain, or been in a car accident, Dr. Frails at Back to Life Health and Wellness can help. Call Back to Life Health and Wellness at 834-2600. I'm Randy Wright with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
Sky's becoming mostly sunny as we head into the afternoon hours. We'll have cloud cover to start our day. Highs in the upper 50s with a west-southwest wind around 5. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber.
Currently 46.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. If you're thinking about buying a home or refinancing a home, see Becky Walker or Jonathan Bolden at First National Mortgage Services, 2230 Mercury Boulevard, an equal housing lender.
High school sports, Blue Raider games. It's only on Rutherford County's Place to Talk. WGNS, AM, FM, online.
Driving, trying to clear my head. I try to sweep out all the ruins that my emotions left.
We're back again. Our number is 893-1450 if you'd like to join us in conversation this morning. 893-1450. Rutherford County Juvenile Court Judge Donna Scott Davenport is with us. We're talking about abused children. Along with Judge Davenport, we have attorney Matthew Wright from the Department of Children's Services, attorney Erica Reed, who's talking about the Guardian Ad Litem program, and also attorney Mark Doughton, who is speaking from the perspective of the parents. 893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to the phones. You're on WGNS. Good morning. How are you today?
Yes, good morning. First of all, I'd like to commend people hard job to have, I'm sure. But like you're saying, you know, just look at your courtroom. You have seven tables there. You may have five fathers for one lady who has kids. And, you know, that's like I had a girl I went to school with that is more money in raising kids than it was raising hogs. And, you know, at one point, you know, you're bleeding the taxpayers to death. At what point they're not the kids, you know, I feel sorry for them, but the parents really need to be the ones that have to step up and do their part first.
Who would like to address that?
He makes a great point, and he's right, because we do have a lot of people that seem to need a lot of help and continue to need help, and at some point, you know, where do we stop that? But the law and the statute doesn't allow that, because we have to protect the children, and it allows that representation for them, and again appointed if they're indigent. And I think the hardest thing that we have to deal with is, and I'd like to make reference to the caller, I love what I do. I don't want to ever do anything else, and I love the people that I am with in that courtroom. But I am not initially kind to the parents. I think they could all tell you that. I do let them know. If it's a drug, a substance abuse issue, I will very firmly and probably loudly let them know they can pick their drugs or pick their children, and we will cut them off. So let's have Mr. Downton maybe address that from the parents' point of view.
I guess I'm often one of those seven attorneys when we have so many, and I get where the caller's coming from and the concern that we're kind of throwing good money after bad. But I will say this, you know, in the criminal justice system, when somebody is charged with a crime, we all know that they have a right to an attorney. And I would submit that this system is more traumatic and more fundamental to our American society than even the criminal justice system. That these people who are engaged in this system need lawyers just as much or more than the people in the criminal justice system. And what the caller suggesting, that these parents should bear the brunt of the responsibility, is absolutely right. And we do have a screening process on the front end to see if they can afford their own lawyers. And we cap the compensation that the lawyers get who are appointed. But the parents who are involved in this system are facing losing their children forever. And that's not just the parents losing their children, it's the children losing their parents forever. So if we're focused on the children in this, a court-appointed counsel for the children and the parents are fundamental to protecting that most basic relationship that we have in our society. And that's why we do it. And it's all based on constitutional rights, just like the rights that we have in the criminal justice system. So that's why we do it.
And I think also from a cost standpoint, and you can't really put a cost on it, but if you get in early and help these children on the front end, I think in the long run, that helps the taxpayers. Because if you help that child on the front end, the probability of that child getting involved in criminal activity down the line decreases. And the probability of that child growing up, becoming a productive citizen, becoming a taxpayer so that they can pay taxes as well as everybody else, that increases. So I think it's the investment you put on the front end of that child's life pays off down the line and decreases the cost to the taxpayers as well.
Now, I may be thinking about this totally wrong, but I can see a child as being an asset for a parent who really maybe loves the child. I mean, it's not our place to say whether they love them or not, but they're looking at them as an asset. I don't want to lose this opportunity to have this tool to get more compensation. Does that ever happen? Am I way out? And if it does happen, how do you protect the child against that?
Well, I think what you're saying, Bart, is that they may be getting food stamps and other state aid because they have a dependent.
A child.
If they don't have that dependent, I will stop the food stamps. I will stop the state aid. I will make them pay child support to the state while we're going through this. And I also usually charge them a minimum of $50 for that representation to put a little money back in the pot and accountability for them that it's not totally free. So that's one aspect, is that if they are receiving any of those services, they cease. They will not benefit because they do not have that child.
And what you're suggesting, that some of these parents are kind of earning some money, some get-by money, by having children, it's a problem that we've had for decades now. Some people are like that, but the overwhelming majority I do not think are. And, you know, these benefits that we give them, welfare or what have you, does help people get by. But when they're with me, when they get into this courtroom, that is a way down the line concern to them. It's not about the money for the overwhelming majority of them. It is about the relationship with that child. What happens more often than not, you talk about the child being an asset, it's not because of financial things. A lot of these parents that I work with are totally codependent on their children, where they will say to me, as if it's a good thing, my child is my life. Well, frankly, that's not a good thing. What these parents need to be able to do is to live their own life and have parent their child through that life. But that's the problem I encounter. It's not that they're worried about losing food stamps. It's they're worried about losing their entire emotional support system, where the child is propping up the parent. And that can be very hard to deal with.
But after you go through a case with these children, do you monitor their situation to be sure that they're safe and that everything goes as was agreed in court?
We generally, it's usually a longer process than any parent wants it to be. These cases don't take 2 months. They normally take a year or more before they go through the whole process. And in that process, we try to put checks and balances in along the way, so we don't just put the child right back in the home. There's a lengthy transition period in the overwhelming majority of cases before we feel safe as a team, as a community of people working in this system, before we put them back in. And after the case is over, as a parent's attorney, my job is usually done. More often than not, I do not talk to them again unless they come back. But the guardian ad litem and CASA, often they do kind of check back in to see how these people are doing. And sometimes the department does, but that's another resource issue where we can't just continue to dump money on these cases in perpetuity. So generally speaking, we try to correct for that before we return the child to the home permanently. We try to make sure that the home's safe by transitioning the child back into the home before we do a full return.
That was Attorney Mark Downton speaking. And now, Attorney Erica Reed, tell us a little about the perspective from the guardian ad litem.
Well, when you're talking about returning the children back to the home, one of the things that we typically do is a trial home pass. And that is where a child will go home 60 days, 90 days, we typically will have reviews, and that is that the parents will have completed their task and the children are placed back in their home, but they do not have custody yet. The state still maintains custody of those children. And during that time, these parents are having to parent just as they would as if they had full custody. And we are in and out of the homes. We're looking to make sure that the parents are actually demonstrating effective parenting. And oftentimes, if we are uncomfortable, that we're still not really sure if they've really got a good grasp on things, we will actually ask that home pass to be continued out. We will have court reviews. And generally, by the time we're through with that home pass, everybody on the team is in agreement that these parents have successfully learned to how to parent their children, and that's when they return custody and we step out. But as a guardian ad litem, I still maintain lots of contact with my clients. I see them in the community. You actually become friends to a certain extent with these children, and they will call you years down the road even, and you become someone that they can depend upon. And also, the DCS records will always be there for us, so that if these families come back into the system again, DCS maintains their records so that we have access to those as well if they come back in and we're reappointed. And that is, a lot is taken into consideration with how much interaction these families have had and how many services that they have had in the past as to how we proceed with the next case.
And I think it's important also, once they leave custody, like I said earlier, there are a lot of watchful eyes out there that these children have contact with. So things do come back or new allegations surface. You have teachers out there, and we have wonderful teachers in this county who, if they see something, they'll report it to us, medical personnel, daycare workers. So once the case is over, it doesn't mean they can just go back to doing what they're doing, because somebody out there will see it.
That was Attorney Matthew Wright with the Department of Children's Services, and we have a listener who has a question this morning. 893-1450, you're on WGNS. Good morning.
Yes, I was calling back with a question. He sort of answered it. They are keeping up with these so-called gifts, but we carried a living room suit to a little girl that we thought was in such bad shape. And, of course, she had a live-in boyfriend that was working illegally, and she was buying even food stamps from her neighbor there that had, like, 50 cents on a dollar, because she'd rather have the cash. And, of course, all this is coming right through our court system, and, you know, it's just, it completely got out of hand. And for what money y'all spending in your court, if you would just take half of that money and then investigate on some of the things that are being robbed from your taxpayers, actually people that pay taxes and is here legally, you could help the kids a whole lot more, because those kids are nothing more than an asset to a lot of these people, so-called parents, that they're not even parents at all. Like I say, the girl told me, she says, more money in raising kids than hogs. So that sort of shows you how much parenthood she had. And thank you.
Thank you for calling. Judge Davenport, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, sometimes it is a vicious cycle, and I do think that we depend on people in our community to make those referrals. If people are abusing that type of system, then there are ways to bring that to different agencies within the state's attention. And if the child is in the preview of the juvenile court, then we're going to be watching them like a hawk and everything that they do. And that's the best that we can do with the children that are under our care. And it sometimes can be a vicious cycle. And but if we're successful with one child, we're successful. And as Ms. Reed said, she sees a lot of her clients out in the community. I've taught at the university now 17 years, and I did a lot of guardian ad litem work when I practiced. I've had children in my class that were my clients. And I might not remember initially, but then I'll remember, and I'll remember their case. And we are stopping some of the cycle of the abuse. And if we have one child that never comes back into the system, or their family, they grow up and have a family, then we are successful. We have a lot of success stories, and we have a lot of parents that do learn how to manage and get off public assistance by the help of the department and their attorneys to get a law-abiding job and support their family. And that's, again, partially what our responsibility is.
So everybody in your court is essentially a role model. And these youngsters, and sometimes it's the only positive role model that they have had in their lives, and you're setting the stage for hopefully success in the future.
Absolutely. You know, oftentimes with these children, when you start hearing their stories, it's just heartbreaking. And oftentimes what they want is just your ears to listen and to be able to be there. And when you're out in town shopping at the Avenue and a child comes up to you and says, "Miss Reed, you saved my life. Thank you." That right there, that one child alone makes it worth everything. And they'll call you when they're getting ready to fill out college applications. You know, they're trying to make their plans for the future. They'll call you. They are excited because they know that you were there to listen for them. And they're also, it's very vital, because when their problem arises in their home, they're a lot more likely to talk to you, and especially if they're coming back in the system a second time, because they've already got that trust. So yes, you are there for them, and they know, especially as a guardian ad litem, that you have fought for them, you have stood up for them, you've listened to them, you've given them a voice. And that is something many of these children never have, and some may never have it again once they leave this court system. But that's something we always try to keep at the forefront of, is how does this impact our children, what is in their best interest, and at the end of the day, how are we going to help them grow to be better individuals, as Mr. Wright said, to live a productive life and to be a good member of the society.
Today we're talking about helping abused children. We're going to check on the weather. We'll be back. We have some more folks with questions, and we'll take your call next, right here on WGNS. Well, we're just a few days away from Valentine's. Yep, that's the 14th, of course, you know that. And Bell Jewelers is there to help you. This is a family business that's going to help your family. Bell Jewelers, right here in town, they have some perfect Valentine's gifts. And just go in and take a look around. And if you get jewelry or something there at Bell Jewelers that is $99 or more, you're going to get a bonus. You're going to get some flowers, candy, and dinner out. How about that? Right there at Bell Jewelers. When you spend $99 or more for a Valentine's gift, you get flowers, candy, and dinner out. But you're thinking to yourself, well, I was looking at a special watch or a really nice bracelet. Well, that takes you to another level. If you spend $499 or more, in addition, you will get a $50 gift certificate to Nature Nook Day Spa. Yes, $50 gift certificate. On top of all that. And if you really want to rekindle that love on Valentine's Day, if you spend $999 or more, you get a Kindle Fire HD as a bonus. So why don't you head on over there, take a look around, and see what your heart would desire. They have it at Bell Jewelers. They're there to help you at Bell Jewelers.
Skies becoming mostly sunny as we head into the afternoon hours. We'll have cloud cover to start our day. Highs in the upper 50s with a west-southwest wind around 5. I'm WGNS staff meteorologist Mandy Thaluber.
Currently 46.
This is the voice of the Blue Raiders, Chip Walters, on Rutherford County's home for MTSU sports.
The Blue Raiders on WGNS AM, FM, online.
893-1450 is our number, 893-1450. If you have a question or a comment this morning, give us a call. We only have a few minutes left in the program, so if you have a thought you'd like to share, we have some folks who are here to help you this morning. 893-1450. And one of the things we have heard over and over, if you see something that you feel is not right, you feel that maybe a child is being abused, or as Judge Davenport even implied, if you see something that you think somebody is illegally using the system, don't be quiet. Not only is it for the protection of the youngsters, but if they're illegally using the system, they're taking away from you, the taxpayer. Let's go back to the phones. You're on WGNS. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing great, thank you.
Okay. First of all, I heard a caller the other, just a few moments ago, talking about the taxpayers paying for this stuff. Let me just inform the judge that I think her position is an honorable position. And if we can save one child, what is it? How can you put a price on that? There was a, in my area where I'm living at, there was a little girl about the age of 3 years old that was unsupervised in her front yard, barefooted. And somebody with the common sense enough to call and reported something that was out of the ordinary. For the rest of the day, there were detectives, DCS, police officers, county cops, and everything, and they did their job, and they did that way. There was a total of 11 dogs living in the house, and one little three-year-old girl running around outside. Somebody drove by and saw something that was not right. And Judge, I hope that you had something to do with this. The children, too, were removed from the house, and the house was deemed uninhabitable by humans. So I just want to commend you on what you do. Every child is worth every penny any taxpayer ever decided that, why should I pay this? Because of the children. Thank you very much.
I tell you, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
I think he summed it up. And that's why I do what I do, and all of our these fine attorneys and the ones that practice in juvenile court, because as we said earlier, it's not about the bucks. It's about the children and trying to make them have a better life. And it is worth when we save one child, because we don't want any children harmed in our county. And we all step up to the plate in juvenile court and try to do our job. So I thank the caller very much for his kind words. And the support we have in this community is outstanding. And I think all of these attorneys here would agree with that, that we try to do our job as mandated by law, but because we want to do it. And we want to try to protect and save our children.
Judge Donna Scott Davenport, our guest this morning on the Action Line, along with some friends of hers, Attorney Matthew Wright from the Department of Children's Services, Attorney Erica Reed, who has spoken this morning for the Guardian Ad Litem program, and Attorney Mark Downton, who is here speaking on the perspective of parents. Thank you all for joining us. Tomorrow at this time, Murfreesboro Police Chief Glenn Chrisman will be joining us. Hope all of you have a super rest of the day. The news is next, and after that, Truman will be here on WGNS Murfreesboro. Have a super day.
Who can say?